Survivor Specialist Phil and Alexa are back, and Alexa is not back. Alexa is gone. She is off skiing and gallivanting in the Alps. How dare she? But she is not here for the Survivor 44 Episode 3 predictions and power rankings. Instead, I am joined by Peridium, who was just here 2 weeks ago. And after, normally we'll have Peridium on, and then we'll always say we're going to bring you back during the season, and then the season comes and goes, and then we do the same cycle over and over and over again. And yet here you are 2 weeks later. I'm just as shocked as you are.
Hey, look, when we talked about coming back, I was ready to go. So you're like, let's go do power rankings. I'm like, I'm all about that. I'm excited to sit down. Any excuse to talk about Survivor, I'm ready.
Perfect. Well, the people are mowing my lawn outside this window, so hopefully it doesn't come through too loud on my microphone. If it does, I'll mute myself. And
I don't hear it. I don't hear anything.
Perfect. Hopefully they stay exactly where they are then and don't come any closer. But yeah, no, this is fun. It's been a very interesting season so far, especially the way it's been received. I think it's been received very, very positively, which isn't generally what the Survivor community is known for, in my opinion, which I think has been nice. And I think it's made this a lot more enjoyable going through these first two episodes and heading into episode number three. We're coming off a really crazy episode where we just saw Carolyn, Jam Jam, and Carson team up to vote out Helen, who I think was a lot of people's favorites to win this game. Helen goes out in instead 16th place. And in a lot of her exit press, she said if she'd go back and change one thing, it would be getting Bruce to duck lower so he didn't smash his head into the piece of wood. But it really did change a lot with Bruce going out of the game. And I mean, were you surprised to see Helen go? Were you surprised to see Carson team up with Jam Jam and Carolyn? Or do you think it made sense?
I was a little bit surprised, yeah. I felt like this was exactly what they were probably hoping me to feel, which was 50-50 with Carson in the middle. I did kind of wonder then, looking at how close Jam Jam and Carolyn were, I thought, so they got two votes. Sarah doesn't have a vote. This just feels like Carson has almost made up, his decision is made up for him. Is he really going to force a rock tiebreak? Because if you break the math down, that's not good for Carson. And I think he kind of did the math for us without us in the behind the scene in his little Excel spreadsheet on the island. And we didn't have to do that. So his decision made sense. I understood it. You know, Helen is a victim of what happens with, I think, small tribes at the beginning. It's unfortunate. If this was the final five, it's not the same thing, but it's not. It's the final 16 or something. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wasn't terribly surprised. I don't think Carson made a terrible move here. We can obviously talk about it in our power rankings a little bit.
Yeah,
it's unfortunate for Helen, though. I had her number two in the preseason. Mm-hmm. So that was a huge hit. And I think this is kind of like Survivor. It's kind of sometimes a roll of the dice. Like, you can get a player like Helen, who I think on paper will do well most seasons. It's just this wasn't that season for whatever reason. And I mean, there's plenty of reasons. We got a couple of them in the episode.
Yeah.
But like, you know, modern, I think maybe on an older season, she could have done better where there was less, maybe if it was a bigger tribe, one of her key allies, probably her closest ally, didn't lose their vote in episode one. Yeah. That's a huge problem. I think that could have been the deciding factor in many ways for her going home. And that's sort of what we've seen in these last few seasons was a player pre-merge gets taken out early because their closest ally is forced into a corner and they have to, and like Carson is in that corner. Mm-hmm. Sarah doesn't have a vote. And unfortunately, Helen is the victim. And it's like, what was her? She should have been less smart.
Yeah.
Like, she's too big of a threat, you know?
Yeah. I think that is what's been happening in newer school seasons is the people who are going early, there's not necessarily always a reason. And I'm not saying that's a negative on the game because I think a lot of people go home in Survivor for no reason. I think even in the older seasons, you saw people get booted just because there was nobody else. And they said, you know what, like, we're going to get rid of you. And maybe it was that she was too smart, but what was she supposed to do differently? And like you just said, her closest ally, and this is what bothers me about the way that the production team changed this one twist this year, is her closest ally didn't have a choice but to take a 66.7% chance of losing her vote. She didn't have a choice. Now, like, if you're gambling and you have a 66.7% chance of losing, you're probably not going to take that chance. And if you are going to take that chance, you better get good odds if you bet. But she's not getting a chance. It's being told you have a 66.7% chance of failure. A lot of people, if you have a 66.7% chance of failure, you're not going to do that thing. And she didn't have a choice. And that bothers me because then she loses her vote on a tribe that's already been knocked down to five because Bruce goes out of the game early through unforeseen circumstances and all that. But I do think that if you're going to start having these lost votes and things like that, and this is going to become a norm, I think a bigger tribe is better because I do think that while there's always going to be a randomness to Survivor, there does need to be a constant. For those Lost fans who there's a Lost documentary coming out. That's fun. But for every variable, there needs to be a constant. And I want more constant. And I feel like with Sarah losing her vote, you're creating votes as variables now. And that shouldn't be a variable, especially on a tribe of five.
Have you listened to the latest Jeff Probst podcast?
No, but I know what's coming.
Yeah, you're not going to like that. That very much clashes. What you just said clashes a lot with Jeff's ideology.
I read some of the notes on it, but why don't you explain that ideology?
I mean, he just said that one of his key things going forward is turning the vote into a form of currency almost. It's not a constant. It's a variable. It is something that can be lost and gained. You can have two votes. You can have zero votes. You can bank your vote. You can, you know, whatever, steal a vote. And he's like, you know, we're trying to find ways to... It used to be a sacred thing, and I think he said it almost verbatim. It was a sacred thing in Survivor, and he's basically making it a little bit less sacred, chipping away at it. And he's just sort of testing to see what will happen. And I think, you know, Helen going, or you see players like Jenny in 42. Unfortunately, she was not going to go, but the circumstances arose. And to be fair, that was not the same because... Chanel, I think that was a bit of a different story there.
Yeah, absolutely.
The Shipwheel Island or whatever. But ultimately, like this is sort of a side effect of creating a vote becoming something that you're not guaranteed to have. And I will say, like, I watched the episode last week and I saw that it was a forced, you have a good chance to lose your vote. And I was like... Ooh, that's unprecedented. They always give you the option to risk it, and now you're forced to risk it.
Yeah,
you don't have a choice. Like even Do or Die didn't force them. They could have not. They could have sat out of the immunity challenge, which was also a constant. You always had the chance to win. Now you get the chance, but there's a massive penalty to win that immunity challenge. But you still have the option to partake or not. Now you don't even have the option to partake. You have to. It's like you have to participate in Do or Die, except that's not the case. You are forced into a 66% chance of losing your vote. And this is just a way of Jeff sort of just trying to spice it up after 44 seasons of the vote. Okay, now I hear it.
Okay, cool. I'll mute.
But this is Jeff just trying to spice it up. He's like, look, we've had 43 seasons of a vote basically being a constant. You always have the option of voting. You always will have your vote unless you choose to do something. And now you don't even have the choice of doing it, which on paper, I don't love, to be quite frank. I don't like it, but it will probably produce a lot of chaos and randomness. And, you know, when randomness happens, players like Helen can get taken out for really not much of their own fault. She didn't do anything terribly wrong.
You know? I swear this gardener's not even doing anything to my lawn. He's just aiming the leaf blower at my window. Like, nothing over here by this window. I don't know why this is happening.
Maybe he watched The Survivor. Bring him in. See what he thinks about the episode.
I am so confused right now. But no, I agree with you. So, look, when I say – you said it a little bit more eloquently than I did, where I agree that – you can lose your vote. That's fine. Like, I'm okay with these things. I don't think it should be like Jamal's lose a vote where it's like pure nonsense.
Did he lose his vote? Oh, I don't even remember.
Did he lose his vote?
Pulled
the paper off the thing was like, okay, you're now essentially voted out of the game automatically because you did something like take a chance. I'm okay with losing the vote, but you need to give people a choice. And that needs to be drawn out because by not giving a choice, now you really are like, you are jamming your finger into the game. It's too much. You're not even allowing the wheels to spin. You're determining if they're going to spin or if they're not going to spin. And that's a little bit of a problem for me. So while I'm okay with the vote being currency, like I like the Lauren advantage. I do like the bank of vote because I think that's more fun than a extra vote because you have to take a risk to get a reward. But Sarah didn't have the option to take a risk to get the reward. She was forced to take the risk to get the reward. She got the reward, but that reward does nothing for Helen. And realistically, it would have done nothing for Sarah. I wonder, would Sarah have made the same choice? Probably, honestly. Mm-hmm. A lot of people would make the choice in Survivor where they say, like Matt did, I'm just going to go for it the next time and I'm going to pull it out. But you need to allow for the option. And also, it's more compelling TV if we're watching them be like, oh, do I want to risk my vote or not? Rather than production be like, haha, you lost your vote. Nothing you can do about it. Like, that's not fun.
Yeah. I mean, I do think I think the producers just don't really care about that. And I think there's probably a lot of fans who don't care either. Like, I have had, I will say, like, on a more meta level as a fan, I have had to adjust my standards, I guess, or like how I approach the show a little bit and look at it more from, I just have to either get on board or move on, I guess, because I don't know. I do feel like it's like a little bit of old man yelling at cloud or whatever that meme is, where you're kind of fighting against a force that you can't beat anyway. And listening to Jeff talk about it, I'm like, yeah, I guess it's not the worst thing, but is it the best thing? But then it's like, they've been doing this for 44 seasons now. It's been 23 years. I mean, I guess I like Survivor as a format is timeless. It can pretty much, it's just a game. It's just a game structure. So they're just like, how can we spice it up and make it a little different? Because Jeff, obviously, he says on a podcast, he doesn't want the game to surpass him. He wants to be ahead of the players, ahead of the meta, I guess. He wants to be able to not let it get stale. And like Survivor can get stale at times. We've seen plenty of seasons in the olden days or even recently where it gets a little boring. And how do you fix it? And there's so many variables. And Jeff's like, what if we just tweak this variable? What if we tweak that variable? What if we force them to possibly lose their vote? And I'm like, yeah, it's an idea. I mean, I've played a lot of games and I know, like, usually randomness doesn't produce, it takes the wind out of my sails as a gamer, as somebody who like likes to focus on the game theory and try to understand how like best to play the game. Yeah. It's almost impossible when there's just randomness involved. And
like, for those who don't understand this, what Peridium is saying is we don't play apples to apples. We do like One Night Werewolf and the deduction games. Well, you know, like
as I've grown up, I tried to get better at playing apples to apples.
I can't.
There was a time where I didn't like apples to apples and I played it in college and I was like, why am I, what's the point? Mm-hmm. And then I started, like, as I've gotten older, I've loosened up and been like, you know what? It's not, this is just a game. It's just for fun. And so I kind of approached the show like, it's just for fun. It's just a show for entertainment. It's tough anyway. And sometimes I have to question, like, what even makes the best players the best? A lot of it is difficult. Comparing apples to oranges, seasons to seasons, players to players. There's so many, like, changing variables from every season to every season that you could flip one small thing and it changes like a butterfly effect.
Yeah.
So maybe, you know, and that does lead us back to, like, Helen going here where
one
small thing changes. Maybe Sarah gets lucky and she doesn't lose her vote. And suddenly now Helen and Sarah have two votes. Carson is not as incentivized to flip. I don't know. I think that would be even more interesting. Like, what does Carson do if Sarah has a vote?
Well, not only that, in that situation, she could always say, I have an extra vote. So Carson, if you don't vote with us, I'm going to have three. Even though she didn't have an extra vote, she could make that argument, you know, of I have an extra vote. So Carson, like, if you're not going to vote with us, I'm going to play my extra vote. That's going to force rocks. Have fun. Because I do think that it's funny you mentioned the thing about, like, best players, best seasons, all of that stuff. Best seasons, I think you can always compare because it's what entertains you. But with best players, I do think we've officially hit the point where it's almost impossible to rank Survivor players. Because was Carson's move really that good? Not really. He didn't really do anything. Followed the numbers. He followed the numbers. Like, it was the right logical move, but it's the only move in that situation. Because one thing that I don't think came across well to the audience, and maybe I'm just an idiot, but one thing I don't think came across well to the audience was that Sarah told everybody she didn't have a vote. And so by her telling everybody she didn't have a vote, Carson, it's a no-brainer. This isn't some brilliant deduction move. This is, there's two over here. There's one over here. I'm going to go with them so that I have no chance of going home tonight. It's the right move. It is a no-brainer. Plus, if you don't actually know what Sarah's advantage is, now as Carson, you go back to Sarah and say, "Did you? I'd be willing to break up that pair over there because I'm scared of Carolyn and Jam Jam again."
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's a small group of, he knows Sarah doesn't have a vote. what's he going to do? Like I said, it's 2-1. He can either join it, make it 2-2, go to rocks. Then Carolyn is safe. Helen is safe. So he and Sarah are drawing rocks.
Yeah.
It's pretty straightforward. Like when you break it down, unless they change like the rock tiebreaker. Yeah, I think it makes sense. It was kind of like it's the right thing to do. And he did it. So like,
Before we jump into the power rankings, I just want to mention one last thing, because you mentioned it about Jeff with the On Fire podcast, and I think it's the funniest thing that he's ever said, unintentionally, of course. But Jeff said he wants to stay ahead of the game. Now, I know this is, you know, coming from you, from him, so it could be a little mixed up here, but he wants to stay ahead of the game, stay ahead of the players, and you know, not let the game pass him. So how about we stop using the exact same effing puzzles so that people can build them in their backyard and prepare for the game? Wow. How about we change that a little bit, Mr. Jeffrey? Because that is a serious, serious issue with this show right now. The fact that people are 3D printing. Look, and I said this on the recap, and I'm going to say it again here. This show is trying to be more inclusive. It is trying to be more about diversity, people from all walks of life, whatever. You have given an advantage by doing this to people with access to 3D printers.
I was going to joke about that. What did you say? I was going to joke about that. I was like, yeah, what about us out here with no 3D printers? I still use a crappy whatever from like 1998 or whatever.
That's what I'm saying. But it seems like old man yelling at clouds. But yeah. I'm going to nitpick over this. Because if you're trying to be inclusive and have everybody have the same level of chance when they walk out on that island, you cannot do this. Because let's say they put somebody like Dreams out there again, right? Homeless, whole life, like just trying to get by. They're not going to be able to prepare for Survivor by building a replica of this in their backyard. Yeah. This is BS and this is beyond the game. Like this is beyond the game. And this is – look, Matthew – good for you. This is not a knock on Matthew at all. You take the resources and you do it. Like, yeah, of course you do it. Same thing with Carson. You go and you 3D print those and you make it happen. But my issue is if Survivor is trying to act like everything's fair and square, everybody gets the same chance to win, everybody has the same chance of winning this challenge, blah, blah, blah. That's not the case. It's just flat out not the case. And they need to mix this up because it's not working.
Yeah. It's meta. It's very meta, and the producers are leaning into it by just when I saw that on episode 2, I was with what's his name, with Carson's little montage. Yeah. I thought this is kind of like the producers are basically like covering their base. Instead of it looking lazy, they're spinning it to make it look like that's the show, and Carson's ahead of the show, or he's really playing hard. And I have said this too. I'm like, a couple of players before the show acknowledged it, before it was a fully known thing, have studied the show extensively. They have, I think David Wright had like a massive binder of all the challenges and was like studying it before he played, I think, Edge of Extinction. And you know, that's a thing I say when you play Big Brother, this is even worse than Big Brother, where I'm like, the format is so repetitive, that the game format is so repetitive. If you've watched like the last 5 years, you will be able to deduce week by week, like generally what the flow of this season is going to be every single week. And it's kind of the same now. And the challenges are a huge part of Survivor. So if you know the puzzles, you can print them out. I have a bunch. I've got them from those Etsy stores. They're cool. I like them. They're actually fun to do. But yeah, I mean, it's a small advantage. Like if I were to go and compete with the tree puzzle or that bat puzzle, I have the bat puzzle, the upside down bat puzzle. It's hard, but you do it enough times, you can do it with, you know, your first time.
So, and I've done the one where you throw the bean bags and then you put the puzzle together. I've done that twice. Okay. And that's difficult because you have to build it up in front of you. Right. But when I did it the first time, me and Will were on a team and we got smoked. The second time we did it, we killed the team. Like, we destroyed them because it was their first time. And it's not that we were better at the puzzle than them. We just already done it once. And I'm all about what David Wright did. Go ahead, prep, do all of that. You want to go walk on a balance beam that's over your swimming pool for 3 months? Go ahead. Yeah, you have an advantage maybe because you have a swimming pool. But, like, anybody can put a piece of wood over something and walk across it. Like, whatever. Yeah. I just think doing the exact same thing – you can do similar iterations,
right?
But doing the exact same thing is a serious problem.
Yeah. And I don't want to feel like we're complaining too much because I still love Survivor at the end of the day. This is definitely one of the sore points. I think the Advantage Island forcing the risk, and then also the puzzle that the challenges have sort of been a sore point for many years. Like it's kind
last
of
season they were good.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah, they did a couple in the post merge, just particularly. Mm-hmm. It's not difficult to like get everyone on. You're gonna get a lot of upvotes if you go on the Survivor subreddit and say, do the challenges need to be more diverse and change it up? It's like, it's a very easy conversation for us to have because it's sort of been that way for a while. They seem to see a little bit repetitive. I'm not sure for them it seems to work. It saves them money and, you know, gets the job done. So it is what it is. They've sort of been reusing it. Maybe for 45 and 46 they'll iterate. Maybe we'll go to two tribes. Mm-hmm. I'm curious to see where we're gonna go with this, but yeah. It's diversity in puzzles doesn't hurt, or diversity in challenges doesn't hurt.
Yeah, no, I agree.
And it's very easy because they have a huge backlog of fantastic challenges that would make the show very fun to watch that they could definitely pull from. It's not a very tall order, I don't think, but and they started doing that. I was impressed in a way. I was like, oh my gosh, they're actually going backwards and pulling old challenges. I mean, Jeff did talk about the auction on the latest podcast.
Yeah.
He talked about what he was saying his sore point, and I'm like, well, Jeff, like, dude, you Google like auction how to fix, you'll find like 30 threads. You can easily find.
What is it? Bloomberg? Is it Bloomberg who put that out where he was like, here's the way to fix it. Tell them that there's not going to be advantages. Done.
Right. Or I mean, there's several ways to fix the advantage that aren't really that difficult. I'm not sure if Jeff believes that those are fixes, or if they're maybe the auction isn't. I think it's more that the auction isn't giving Jeff what he wants out of the show right now, as opposed to say 15 seasons ago. For him, it's a little more gamey and he wants a little bit more. He talks about like he wants to reverse engineer situations. He thinks of like, how do you get into situations that are like this? I want to try to find a way to create that and make it a possibility. And so like, I think he took a lot of inspiration from that Suri moment in Game Changers where he looked at that and said, I don't think that they intended for that to happen because that could have happened theoretically on so many seasons where there's three idols in play or something like that. There's three tribes, three idols, whatever. It just happened that three players saved idols until the final six and one dude who didn't have an idol won immunity. And then they had this random advantage. And Jeff loved that. And he's like, that's like the poster child for that season, the poster for that season, the movie poster. And he's like, how can we get like a movie poster for every season? And he tries to reverse engineer these wacky situations with forcing people now to not have a vote or, you know, whatever. Anyway, it's an interesting concept. I'm a little more like keep it organic, but I'm willing to go for the ride. I've been through Survivor for now for 26 seasons, watching it back to back to back. So,
yeah, then we'll get right into Power Rangers, but there's this song I always listen to where the guy says, you're doing it wrong, you're dissecting the bird. And it's like, it's about writing a song. And it's all the people who are dissecting the bird. They're trying to figure out what's going to make a perfect song. What's going to make this better? Just write the damn song.
I like that.
Just play the damn game. Don't dissect the bird. Just know it's a bird. Like, and I think that's the issue I have with Survivor right now on some of these things. Because overall, I am enjoying this season and I loved 43 and I thought 42 was really good. Mm-hmm. Do I think that they're Africa and Australia and fuck, I'll throw in Thailand. Do I think it's those? No, I really don't. But it's such a different game that what are you looking for from an entertainment standpoint?
Yeah.
I have been very entertained by what I have seen so far on this season. I just get frustrated with that. Yeah, I have a friend who works on another show and he texted me and he was like, that's the, like when Jeff was like, you built this in your backyard. He's like, that's the type of thing you leave on the editing floor. You don't let people know that he did that. But let's jump into these power rankings because this whole conversation is going to keep going. And
we'll go. I mean, I can go for
him. I love season 43.
I like 44 through the first two episodes. Yeah. If it keeps up this level of energy with these characters and these, like, I have several moments this episode that I'm like, I legitimately was exhaling through my nose. Like that was funny.
Yeah.
So, and that's what I want. I want, if the game is going to be all up in the air, I would love to have people that I enjoy watching, you know, try to make sense of it. It's like Mario Party isn't always fair, but at least I can have a good time with my friends.
Yeah. Well, exactly. Exactly. See, and Mario Party is better than apples to apples. Anyway.
Yeah, okay. For sure.
So Peridium, who's your number one? Who do you have as the safest this week?
The safest this week. So going into episode three.
Episode three, who do you have as the safest? And you can kind of give us like your idea of like Do I see this person winning? No, but they're not going home.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm not, this is not my winner pick. This is not who I think is going to even get to episode four per se, but for who's going into episode three, I put, and I did it because I just have to, because I don't know the next time I'll get to, I put Carolyn at number one.
Which is great, because so did Alexa and I. So we're all
we're on the same page. Okay, and I didn't. I don't know what your opinions are. I don't know like who you've got at the top or the bottom. So I'm not copying anyone. I put Carol at number one because she's got an idol, which is a guaranteed safety. The votes are much smaller now, so if she were to play, she's more likely to play it now than she was at the final with five people. If they go back to Tribal Council. She's got Jam Jam in her pocket. They're working together. They seem like a pretty, like, Jam Jam didn't have to save her this episode, but he did. And he basically forced Carson in on to join their side. That was a bit of a power play. I liked it. But I do think, like, ultimately between Jam Jam and Carolyn having an idol, being on the side with numbers, not looking like she's going anywhere. I'm not sure she's the mover and the shaker of the tribe or the player with the most influence on the tribe. But I think she's certainly sitting the prettiest, and I'm happy for her.
Yeah. No, and so I'll take the time to talk about my number two, because you pretty much just said everything I want to say about Carolyn, but they go hand in hand, and that's Jam Jam. You just said, I don't think Carolyn's the mover and the shaker on that tribe. I think Jam Jam's the mover and the shaker on that tribe, but Carolyn has the ammunition right now, and that's the difference. And we've seen this happen, though, for players in the past, where the person who looks like they're the brains of the operation ends up going out before the other person who doesn't look like the brains of the operation. And we saw that kind of with Omer and Marianne, right? I mean, that was, Marianne was kind of being viewed as like being dragged along, didn't really know what was going on. And she was able to turn it on Omer. I'm not saying Carolyn's going to do that. She might not, she could, I don't know. But I just think that Carolyn and Jam Jam are in a perfect spot right now. They're on a small tribe. I don't know who Sarah Wade is. I really don't. I made all the jokes preseason that
she's
she was
the angel on Carson's shoulder.
That's all I know about her. I mean, she really hasn't been a part of it. This, for me, if you want to talk old school Survivor, she feels like an old school player in that her allies are gone. She got no edit and she's gone next. Like, that's what it feels like to me. Like, she just feels like she's the walking dead, and I hope she can pull it together. But I don't know. All that being said, I'll have Carson a little bit lower, but Carolyn Jam Jam, that's my 1-2. And for those who are keeping track of Alexa's at home, wondering if you're beating her, that's also Alexa's 1-2.
1-2. Wow. So I decided to approach it a little differently and pick a top for each tribe, a top player, and decide to put them at 1-2-3. But if I were to say rank the number twos, I had Jam Jam at number two on the purple tribe, on Tika. But I do think that I would also say he is safe. More safe than I think my number two and number three. I have him at number four.
Okay.
But that's just because of the methodology I decided to use, where I picked the bottom are 13, 14, and 15 are one from each tribe, and then the top three are one from each tribe.
Okay.
So like for my number two, if you want me to get, should I talk about?
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
So my number two I have is from the Soka tribe, from Green, and I picked Danny. Also has an idol. I don't know the tribe dynamics super well, and I did move him to number two at the last second. I actually had him at number three originally, behind my person at the top of the Ratu tribe. But I put Danny at number two because I think that we're looking at possibly a 4v2 situation happening. He's got the idol. It seems like nobody knows he has the idol. He's telling us he doesn't want to tell anyone. I like that. We've had a lot of loose lips in the modern era of the show, and it's really been sinking their ship. I don't see that happening with Danny at the moment. And I feel like we're being told that's not going to happen. So between that, the 4v2 split with Franny and Matt looking like that, they're kind of putting themselves a big target, a big bullseye on them. It's hard for me to sort of break down where this Green tribe is at still, as far as where does Danny fit? I don't know his relationships with any of these people, but I'm willing to put him at number two. He's certainly at the top of the Soka tribe. For now, I'm working with scraps here with Soka.
Soka sucks, man. And I don't mean that for them as people. Soka I mean, the edit sucks. It's so bad. And I've really been harping on this because I understand that you only have so much time in these episodes and you're going to bounce around here and there. And they did a pretty good job of it last season with the Blue Tribe. I can't remember their name, but with Carla and Cassidy and Jane.
Oh, Coco.
And, Coco. Thank you. Yeah. Why did I not remember that?
I don't know.
But they did a good job with Coco because it seemed like, okay, they're not going to go to tribal, but we're going to give you a little bit of them this week. And then next week we'll show you a little bit of them. But a lot of it was about the dynamic of the tribe. Who's working with who? What are we talking about? Who's silly? Gio and Ryan are off doing their thing. It seems like it's going to be the four against the two. And then it ends up being where Lindsay kind of gets herself voted out. What's all this going on? With Sokka, I know nothing. And I get the Franny and Matt thing is there, and we see Claire rolling her eyes. There are three other people on that six-person tribe that I have no idea if they even notice Matt and Franny are kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. I have no idea. We haven't heard anything. And Danny, who had a really fun episode, and I agree with you. I have him at number three. So Danny, who I have at number three and you have at number two, had a really good episode, got an idol, said he's not going to tell anybody. Has he spoken to anybody else on his tribe? Because if he has, we don't know about it. Who is he bonding with?
There was a scene where the other five were like, it kind of gave me like Tony vibes where they're like, where's Danny? And you're like, oh, he said he's got his routine. He goes, he looks for like coconuts and palm fronds and wood. And they're like, he's out looking for the idol. And they're just like, oh, he's just doing his thing. And I'm like, wow, they're really blasé. Like Danny is a lot, like they're letting Danny just get off scot-free, running around the jungles like Tony would looking for idols. Interesting. I don't know. Like that tells me that's a pro in his corner.
For sure.
Like to be able to just get away with that. And from what we're seeing, it's being reinforced. It's not being shown to be a negative. I thought it could be a because there are plenty of times where players wander away from their tribe and they get like, yeah, and like that might be the end that could sink their game because they're away. In Danny's case, it's shown to be the opposite. So I feel pretty, that's why I partially am like, you know what? If his tribe are looking at him like letting him go. And then in the next time on Survivor, we see a very quick flash of the four of them, not the showmance, the four other players working together. And I'm like, you know, that's a breadcrumb, but it gives me an idea of like, okay, this tribe dynamic is being set up. We have it too. We have like the Figgy Taylor, except more likable than Figgy Taylor versus the other four. If Danny's in that four, which it seems like he is, and he has an idol and his tribe is letting him get away with basically murder.
Yeah.
I'll put him at number two. I'll put him up high. Like he seems like he's not going anywhere.
Yeah. And so Alexa ended up putting Franny at three and I don't know why. I'm just telling everybody that so that they can keep track with hers. I'm surprised she put Franny at three.
Yeah, I don't have Franny at three at all.
No, I have Franny much lower too. Yeah, but too. I guess what my biggest complaint here is like, yes, it's being backed up for Danny and all that. I'm seeing in the chat here, they're like, well, Claire, like Leslie says, Claire says that Matt is bad for Franny's game. I saw that. I heard that. However, I don't actually know if that's true based on the other three people or if Claire just thinks that, because if this becomes a Claire versus Matt situation, I have no idea if Josh can speak. One, I don't know if Josh or Heidi or Danny want to side with Claire or if they want to side with Matt and Franny. I really don't know. We're taught to think that showmances are a bad thing, but we only heard Claire's perspective on that showmance. Matt and Franny weren't getting crap from anybody else on that tribe.
Yeah.
It's weird. I just feel like the Sokka editing, and I feel bad for the players. I feel bad for Josh. Like I really do, because that just sucks. Yeah. But I feel bad for the players because
I mean, this isn't like, it's kind of like Luvu. They're not going to tribal council.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll go to tribal next week and we'll get a little better idea. It's sort of just, unfortunately, with the way that the show is structured, it was so much of it was about the bird cages. Mm-hmm. And it was about, like last week, they went to the island and then we had a ton of medical situations. So it's difficult. They don't have a lot of time to like flesh out everything because they got to show like that birdcage being found and like the dynamic of that. That's a new thing that's being shown. Mm-hmm. So they're going to highlight what's the strategy, what's the drama around it. It's certainly keeping like the viewers are curious to know. And so Danny found it. Danny's going to get a little bit of screen time. It's pro Danny. And then it's unfortunate for players like Josh who, you know, that he won the immunity challenge for his tribe. I thought that was a nice little moment for him, but we didn't really hear anything about that. So,
yeah, no, I agree. And I'm just thinking about this because we were just talking about confessionals. Quick update on the prop bet game for those who are playing along. Carolyn only had 8 confessionals last episode. She didn't hit 10. So nobody got points for that. Daniel Muto has 16. Max Wiener 5983 has 11. Survivor Dylan has 11 and Jay Singman 0208 has 11. So that's the leaders up at that. I just wanted to mention that because we weren't sure with that. But so now speaking of no confessionals, you have Danny at 2, you had Jam Jam at 4. I base my next couple people on the fact that they got no confessionals. But who do you have at three? Who's your top person from Orange?
Yeah, Orange Tribe. This was a bit of an interesting debate between three people, actually. But I ultimately settled on Brandon at number three. I picked Brandon for a couple of reasons. He's physical. I think that goes fairly well, especially with the way that the tribe managed to get through. He got through the first vote. He technically could have been voted out if he didn't play his idol, which wouldn't he wouldn't be here, but he is. He played it, so good for him. I think he's got a strong connection with Matthew. The two of them in a tribe of five is very powerful. And I think that they actually might have Lauren more than the edit lets on. It's very easy for them to get, for Brandon to get overthrown. And this is a very, this is why I put him at number three on the number three in my rankings as opposed to number two or one. Mm-hmm. It's very possible Lauren could go with Jamie and Kane, but I'm not seeing it. I feel like that's like in a very loose fantasy world right now. And maybe next week that'll happen. And then we'll go back and be able to replay this part. I was rewatching, I was rewatching last week with Brandon Shapiro and he was like, Helen, lock it in. She's safe. For episode two, she's safe. And I was like, oh man, that's
poor Brandon. Yeah, he had 4 points for that. And what's sad is I only beat him by one with five, and he beat Alexa, who had her at spot two. Fun fact for him. I don't know if you heard us talk about it on the recap or if you watched it. I don't blame you if you didn't. But my first pick in the fantasy draft was Maddie. The second pick overall and second pick in the draft by Alexa was Helen. We are on an absolute heater. And if you're basing this, if you wonder
number three, who's number three?
Intern took Matthew. So if you think Matthew's going to go home,
I don't think he is.
Maybe he is now though.
I mean, okay. Well, that's what this, you guys said that about Helen last week. So here we are. But yeah, Brandon looks like he's got a strong connection with Matthew, and that is partially what saved him, I think, more than just playing the idol. It was the knowledge to play the idol. And then I've got Lauren, who's sitting around, like, is she going to... She's got two votes in a tribe of five. That's not enough. She needs at least one more. But I don't see Jamie and Kane bolstering her more than I would see Brandon. And from what I've heard per Maddie, Lauren told Brandon about her extra vote. So we don't see it, and that's a little extra footage that goes beyond the episode, but it leads me to think that Brandon's probably sitting okay, and I don't think he's going anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, I like Brandon's spot, but my number four and my top player in that tribe is Lauren. I don't see how they vote Lauren out of the game here, because Lauren has the extra vote. She successfully banked the vote. It seems like Jamie and Kane are on one side. And really, I don't even know if Jamie and Kane are paired up. It just feels like Jamie's over there because she's kind of the weakest one on the tribe. And Kane's now just up Schitt's Creek. And then you have Matthew and Brandon, who are kind of doing their thing. And I think they're together now. I think Lauren, though, is in the best spot, because I don't think we're going to get a 2-2 split. And even if we did get a 2-2 split, she has the extra vote and her own vote. Mm-hmm. And even if it ended up being a 3-1 and they were going to vote for her, she has to just find one other person to join her side and she can force a tie. I like Lauren's spot a lot right now. So I have her at number four. And I think for her to go this week would have to be a Jenny-like tribal council where somehow the person with one of the advantages was Jenny, which I just don't see happening.
I could see something like a part of me put Lauren a little lower just because it's like, well, we're sort of fed that in the first episode, there was a little bit of antagonism towards Lauren. And I wondered if that was possibly foreshadowing like antagonism at the next time they go to tribal council. And maybe Lauren does get turned on because she has an extra vote. And they just, the guys, Brandon and Matthew, decide to loop in Jamie or Kane. And at that point, it's like, if you're the last person, let's say Lauren needs one person. Yeah, but that's just to force a tie. Mm-hmm. And if it's not in that person's best interest, if they're voting for Lauren to work with Lauren, because then she's going to get safe on the revote. It's the same thing as Carson. Like,
yeah.
If Brandon and Matthew say, Jamie, come with us, we're going to vote Lauren out, Kane is not incentivized at all to work with Lauren there. He doesn't have any, there's just not, the numbers are not in his favor. It's kind of like what we saw with the Daniel and Chanel and High. And like, there's no good reason for them to force rocks. So what do? You just flip and hope that you can move forward from there. But at the same time, that's like a lot of what ifs. So,
and I just don't see them spinning it on Lauren. Like, it would be really hard to imagine a 4-1 vote at this tribe.
I have Lauren in my top half of my power rankings as well. Mm-hmm. So I'm not, I could flip her and Brandon too. I definitely think there's a good argument to put her at the top of this tribe.
So Alexa has Matt at four. So she's all about Maddie or frat, whatever she's calling it.
She's Matt on Soka.
Yeah, she has Franny at three, Matt at four. So she's loving that. and I have no reasoning for it. I'm just reading what was put in front of me. I'm Ron Burgundy right now. You have Jam Jam at four. I'm going to jump into my five real quick, which is Carson.
Okay.
Alexa had her five as Brandon, so she's at least on the same page with you on that one. But I have Carson at five. Look, if Purple goes to Tribal, it's Sarah. She's doomed, and I don't think that she's going to get – we know Carolyn has the cage idol. I don't know if there's going to be other idols on this season. Mm-hmm. And if there are, I don't think they're popping them out yet because they want the cage idol to be more valuable than it is. And Mike Bloom posted the picture where everybody's real idol is somebody else's fake idol across all of them. So because of that – I think they just want the real idols and fake idols in play. I don't think they want anything else in play right now, which I'm all about because now it's just becoming a game of just like chicken. Like everybody's just running around and I'm all about that. So I don't think that Sarah is going to have the ability to save herself in any way because the advantage she got for risking her vote sucks. It's a post-merge advantage that she got now and it doesn't do her any good to keep her in the game.
Yeah. Yep, it is a post-merge advantage. I thought the same thing. I'm like, it doesn't help her if they go back to Tribal in the pre-merge. It's really not going to benefit her in any way. It won't even help her for the episode that she would have to have used it this episode and then got the idol if Carolyn played it, which would have been fantastic. I wish, in a way, it's almost like maybe Carson should have worked with Sarah to get the idol. But Carson's ultimately, I think, wants to work with Jim Jam and Carolyn. So he's like, I don't even need Sarah's advantage. Like, what's the difference between having a fractured three-person or four-person tribe versus having a 3v1 with the idol on our side?
Yeah.
I get it.
And I always say that in recent seasons, people sometimes, when they get to these smaller tribes, they start playing like it's the final four, not realizing there's two other tribes playing. I think this was a smart move by Carson because he realizes he's not playing at the final four.
Yeah, I think the smart play is to always try and encourage tribe unity. Mm-hmm. And like you said, with the idols, the Birdcage idol is trying to do the opposite. It's a twist designed to eliminate like this hidden idol. Like, we don't know where it is. We don't know who has it. We have no indication of who might even have it. And now they have an indication because it's in plain sight and they have a cage. And I thought it was funny when Soka walked up and Danny had already put his thing back and they're talking about like something about like, you know, we'll have to see. They're looking at the thing. There's a confessional, I think, by Claire who sets it up like we're going to have to check it out. And then they shows them looking at the bag in the cage. And I'm like, it clearly looks like it's like not as burgeoning as it was. Mm-hmm. And they're just looking to go, yeah, it looks the same.
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks the same. And they just walk off. I thought that was really funny.
Yeah.
It's like this is what they're trying to do, create a situation where the tribes are divided. There's paranoia running rampant. We kind of got the little bit with Tika where they didn't know who to believe. And they're all pointing their fingers at each other saying, I think you have it. We were like, I thought it was pretty obvious Carolyn had it based on how it was set up.
I can't believe. And I complained about that. The editors, I think, have done a good job this season. Yeah. But, man, you got to tell us why they're not picking up.
I was so confused. I was like, wait, four of them. I'm like, are they all really that dumb? Like, how do you not suspect Carolyn, who's also very just like, I guess she's so over that. This is why I tweeted like the meta is like be such a hot mess that people just accept you for being a hot mess. Mm-hmm. They don't even think that she had the idol, at least from what we saw. Because she's just such a hot, they're like, she's just Carolyn. And her reactions are, if anything, I thought it was sus because she's like, I don't know how to react. I'm just trying to be like chill and normal.
The fact that she was trying to be that, it's like.
I know. I'm like, I'd be like, Carolyn, you okay? You're not throwing leaves on yourself all of a sudden. Like, why aren't you rolling on the ground? Like, what's happening? I thought that was a really funny moment. But that's what the idol is trying to do here. And I did, like you pointed out, I like how they produced a fake idol with the real one. And it's like, they're basically like, we were encouraging you as a player to get creative with this fake. And the fact that it isn't so straightforward. It is every tribe has the other tribe's fake.
And I love it because we could get a scene coming up in one of these episodes where somebody from the other tribe, let's say from Carolyn, tries to go to Danny in the post-merge and say, look, I have the real idol. Here it is. And she shows it to him and Danny goes, that's the fake idol. I know that's the fake idol, but he doesn't know. So this is a great twist implemented in this game. The Birdcage itself, I don't know yet. I'm still kind of like, you know, I'm going to hold out and see how it plays. But the idea of here's two idols here's one that's real and the fake one is the real one of another tribe. That is phenomenal by production. And I don't say that often, so I want everybody to understand that is phenomenal by production. That's the type of chaos and just unpredictability we want them implementing into the game, I think, because that creates a level of drama that the players are now going to use the information they have to create that drama rather than production creating the drama without really giving the players what they need.
Yep. Yeah, I agree. I think it's much better than forcing them to lose a vote or gain this or gain that. Like, it allows them to have, they have to deduce what's real and what isn't. They're allowed to think outside the box, and it encourages the players to play the game a little bit with a little more savvy and try to figure things out. I like it. I don't have a problem with it.
Who's your number five?
Number five is Matthew on Ratu, one arm Matt. Yeah, he's up there. It was him and Brandon. I'm like, I do think they're kind of the power players of Ratu, and I'm looking at him like, he's got a pretty smart, like, he plays his shot in the dark in episode one, and he comes back, and I was like, I spent a while trying to, because I was breaking down the episode for my video, and I was like, why did he do that? Like, why did he play his shot in the dark? And I didn't know for sure. I'm like, I have like three theories. And then, like, the day before the episode came out, episode two, they gave us a secret scene online on YouTube, and it revealed. It was the first scene of episode two, and it's him saying, this is why I did it.
Yeah.
Like, oh, okay. So I just edited out my other theories and just
made yourself look really smart.
I just said, like, well, I did say, like, I had a couple theories, and then they put out episode two, and I didn't bother sharing them because it's like they're not right. But seeing him play the shot in the play his shot in the dark in a creative manner, I thought was really cool. I appreciated that. It made me like the shot in the dark a little more. I'm not super high on the shot in the dark in the first place. I find it tends to suck the wind out of the blind side or out of a vote when the player at the bottom plays their shot in the dark. I was a little bit disappointed with it for the last three seasons. So for me this time, it wasn't as bad, but it was just a lot of chaos in that first episode.
Yeah.
Go
ahead.
No, I was just going to say I have Matthew at number two or at number five, number two in the Ratu tribe because he's connected with Brandon. I think they have probably the strongest duo. And I do think in some level, I don't just want to say Lauren, whoever's got the advantages is the most powerful player. Cause I just, I'm like, social game has to be worth something. And I do feel like because this tribe is so, it's a group of five individuals, Matthew and Brandon having what appears to be a really close bond or at least a closer bond than anyone else, I think elevates them a little bit higher. And I think they're going to end up working. I think they're going to get Lauren. I do think Kane and Jamie are probably looking like in hot water.
Yeah. Well, I have Brandon at number six. I have Matthew still a little bit lower because the injury worries me just a little bit, even though I think that Jamie or Kane going home instead of Matthew this week makes sense. I just don't know if Matthew is going to be like a post-merge type player just in case the injury is serious. Not even serious, just nagging, I guess is the better word. But I do have Brandon at six. I think the fact that we saw Brandon talk about like, I'm pissed, and Matthew say, this is why I did this, tells you everything you need to know, though, about who's important on that tribe. Because Jamie was the first person in the history of the show, which I know it hasn't been around that long, but to play the shot in the dark successfully, and I know it didn't save her, and I know it wasn't around that long, whatever, but we didn't hear her at all. We didn't get a reason why she did it. We didn't hear them say, oh, you know, I was going to be the target, and then I told them I was going to play this, which took the target off of me, and ha, I would have gotten them any. We didn't hear that. And that's what Maddie told us, and Matthew have told us a little bit in their tweets and things like that, but we didn't hear that from her. And I don't care what Twitter says. I don't care what post-game press says. I care what the show says. And Jamie right now is not coming out looking as pretty as Brandon and Matthew do. And I just think, like, Matthew got the explanation. Jamie didn't. Brandon seems like he's got – all of a sudden, Brandon's an underdog. Give me a break. The guy can squat a truck, and he's an underdog. And I'm going to put him at six because maybe he is. Maybe he's going to have this comeback of, if I didn't play my idol – I mean, Gabler was going to play a shot in the dark at the first tribal council. Didn't do it. Goes on to win the game. Nick Wilson would have been voted out first, maybe, if Pat didn't get hurt. Goes on to win the game. And I look at this, and I say – Brandon, he's got a great story now. If he didn't play his idol at the first tribal, he would have went home 2-1. Instead, he goes on to win the game. So why not?
I mean, anything's possible. It's the new era. Like, Carolyn's number one in my power rankings.
Yeah, I never thought I would do
and
that.
You know, there's a decent chance I'll put her in my winner picks. Like, usually after three episodes, I make a video talking about who I think is going to win the season. I mean, I was dead wrong last year, but, you know, I think a lot of people were.
Everybody but me.
I'm looking at Carolyn like, why not?
Yeah.
Why not the woman who was like, the guy comes over. I love that. By the way, I just want to say that scene with Carson, Carson's on my number six, by the way.
Okay.
Carson comes over and is like, I want to work with you guys. And Carolyn just lies on the floor, starts melting, stands up, says, I'm not normal. And then throws leaves over herself.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, why not pick her as the winner?
Yeah.
Anything can happen.
Here's my reason. And I've been saying this a lot, and I've kind of been like, I don't think I'm in the popular opinion on this, but this is why I don't see her as the winner still. Mm. She still has to sit in front of a jury at the end of the game and convince them to vote for her. And everybody keeps comparing it to Gabler, but Gabler was a very like even keeled guy who could sit there and speak. Carolyn, I worry, falls more into like the Ty situation or the Nora situation, where because she's just scatterbrained, they might not be able to get her story, right? Did you watch the Oscars last night, out of curiosity?
No, I didn't watch
it. Okay. Spoilers for anybody who didn't watch the Oscars and is taping it for some reason, which I did last night, but I made sure to watch it last night. Brendan Fraser won, and Brendan Fraser was so shell-shocked that he won Best Actor and like was so like, oh my God, that when he got up there and he started talking, you could tell that the moment was like overwhelming him, and he had a speech prepared. But he goes up there, he thanks who he needs to thank, he says what he needs to say, and a lot of his stuff, it was like you could tell he was going somewhere, and they kind of just like drifted off, and it went somewhere else. And I feel like that's what would happen with Carolyn at the final tribal, where it would be like, I know I want to say this, but how do I get to that point? And I just feel like whoever sits next to her, if Carolyn plays a perfect game, she might not have to do much at the final tribal. But I don't feel that Carolyn's going to play that type of game, especially since in every single season since COVID, final tribal council has been where the player has won the game. Gabler won it at final tribal. Marianne beat Mike at final tribal. And Erica beat Deshaun at final tribal. Erica probably to the least extreme of that.
Yeah, I was going to say Erica, I think, kind of was the winner.
She was kind of going to win it. But still, everybody says that her final tribal performance just solidified that that was going to happen. Mm-hmm. I don't know if Carolyn's going to go in with an Erica-type story where it's going to be you just have to sit there and say like one or two right things. And I worry she can't make that argument.
I agree. I mean, I think there's a... I would usually agree. I just I'm like I'm jumping at shadows with Gabler, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm like I'm tempted to just say yeah, maybe that sounds logical. That sounds logical, but then apparently so does playing a shot in the dark in the first episode when you're not the target. But
And only talking about a boot that wasn't even on the jury at your final tribal performance. I mean, sometimes that's all it takes, right?
There you go. Yeah, yeah.
Well, Alexa and I are in agreement on number seven. We both have Josh, and that's I feel for this guy. I have nothing to say for him. And people are saying, oh, well, Erica, Marianne, Gabler, they didn't have that much early either. No, Josh has gotten nothing. Like, there's a difference between not getting that much. And one of Josh's two confessionals this season was literally him being like, ah, I'm here, and that's it. Like, it's crazy how little he has been on our screens, and it's to a level of it's more like Natalie White. And Natalie White.
It is.
They've never made that mistake again. They've under-edited some winners, but they've never under-edited them to the level of Natalie White.
Yeah.
Josh has nothing here, which is why, though, I also think Josh is safe, because we need to get a little something from him at some point. Heidi, we got a lot more. Even though they have the same amount of confessionals on the season, Heidi's confessionals were so much more meaningful in the first episode with the fire and everything like that. That I could actually see her being the boot from the Green Tribe if they go, because there's a little bit of a story there. If Josh goes, that is up there with Hope. And
episode three. Oh, yeah. Hope.
And what's the other girl's name?
Oh, there's a couple. I don't know.
They were on the same tribe. It was that fans versus favorites Karamoan tribe. It was
Allie.
Yeah. Hope and Allie. Like, they were not there. So that's how I feel about Josh. So I have Josh at seven because I think he's just got to survive.
Okay. I put Lauren at seven. We'd already talked about her a little bit. I feel like Lauren, Matthew, and Brandon are going to control Ratu. Based on episode two alone, like, they framed Kane as he voted out Brandon. Didn't look good for him. Jamie is there. I don't know. She played a shot in the dark. It worked, but... we don't know what's going on. Jamie seems a little awkward at times, but maybe we'll talk about it a little bit later on. I don't feel great about her social game at the moment with this five. But yeah, I have Lauren at number seven, mostly because she's just in the, I feel like she's in the middle of the tribe and she could probably go either direction. I just feel like if any direction, she's probably going to go towards Brandon and Matthew.
Yeah, I agree with that too. And I just, I don't think, like you said, Jamie's a little bit awkward, but I just don't think Jamie and Kane are married to each other here. So Lauren, I don't think she's necessarily choosing between Matthew and Brandon and Jamie and Kane. She might be choosing between Matthew, Brandon and Jamie or Matthew, Brandon and Kane. Like, right. it feels like this is going to be a 4-1 vote either way.
Jamie's kind of like the Sarah of Ratu.
Yeah.
She's kind of like the fourth person. She's not the next boot. Maybe I feel like Kane's looking like the big, most in trouble based on what we saw with Ratu. Mm-hmm. But we'll keep talking as we go. I also had Josh at number 9. So I flipped him. I have Heidi at number 8. And I don't have a lot to say about either of them. You already said exactly.
You still have Heidi at 8, though?
I have Heidi at 8 only because her premiere episode for me showed more of who she was. We got nothing with Josh. I mean, it's really scraps. It's dire straits with him right now. He won them the challenge this episode, like single-handedly with him handling the snake over there at the end. I thought, damn, that was impressive. That was him, right? He did that?
That was him. Yeah,
I'm like, who? And I just didn't feel much because I don't know. They haven't invested anything in him yet. And I know that he's going to get something. This guy, he's got a good story. And I'm just shocked. So to me, I'm like, I'm willing to put him in the middle because he's not in that showmance with the target. He seems like he checks all the boxes for a player who should be doing well. I just don't know. Yeah. And so it's tough for me. I stick him right in the middle of my power rankings. He's kind of like he's the line between players that I feel good about and players that I'm starting to wonder.
So you think Heidi is safe then this week?
I think she could be flipped with Josh too. I think either or. It's basically 8-9 with they're splitting the difference. It's all the same. You could easily flip them around.
Yeah, I feel for Josh. Josh is getting like almost like a Troyzan game changers at it right now. Except we all knew who Troyzan was because we saw him on One World and we saw so much of him on One World. I mean, I think he still ended up with more confessionals than Kim and he got 7th or 8th. Like I don't even remember what place he got, but he still got so many confessionals. So yeah, it's crazy what's happening with Josh. My 8, I have Matthew. And then at 9, I have, I'm going to go with Franny. I'm going to put Franny at number 9. And my reasoning for putting Franny there is I think that Franny is going to come out scot-free from this. I know Claire said this isn't good for Franny's game, but I think that we hear that all the time, but I feel like it's get rid of Matt then. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like it's get rid of Matt, don't get rid of Franny. And if they do decide to get rid of Franny, then okay, like she should have gotten out of this showmance, whatever. But I feel like the fact that Claire is saying this isn't good for Franny's game, I think she likes Franny more than Matt and probably has more of a relationship with Franny and is frustrated that Franny is blowing up her own game by staying so close to Matt. Yeah. I feel like you were saying Jamie's a little awkward. I think Matt's a little awkward. I think he's endearing, but I think he's a little cockerny. And I think that might be turning off some of the tribe members from him. And then the fact that he's also there with Franny so tight, I think that's hurting him.
Yeah.
So I think Franny has the better chance of surviving this, which if this was pre-40, you better believe I'd have the woman in the showmance well below the man. But on this season, I just don't think it's as important. And I think on Ahsoka tribe that has 6 people and Danny is their strongest man, and Josh just won them the challenge. They don't need Matt.
No.
So if you had to choose between Matt and Franny, who do you like more? I think they like Franny more. So I have her at 9.
I put Franny at 11.
Okay.
But I do. So speaking of the dynamics of Soka, the 3 players who I feel like maybe I shouldn't say 3, but I put Claire at 10 and Franny at 11 only because Claire is seemingly the opposition to this showmance from what we've seen. She's more negative. She's tells Franny, I think that would be a good point to maybe distance a little bit, you know, put a little bit of distance between you and Matt right now. I think it's leading towards there being a schism if they do go to tribal council with this showmance being at the bottom. And, you know, I put Franny above Matt because Matt's in my bottom 3. He's at 13.
Okay.
I think this is more of a pro Franny than it is a pro Matt here as far as how this is going to shake out. Matt, yeah, he doesn't have a vote for two tribal councils. That could extend into the post-merge if they're like the Luwu and they don't go to tribal council at all. Matt goes into final 12, final 11 with no vote. Like, wow,
That's a big deal.
what do you bring into the table? Are you the Omer? Because Omer didn't have a vote, but
He's
that's
not
not
the Omer.
right. It doesn't feel like he's the Omer at all. And so I'm looking at it like this is more of a Franny. She's probably going to come out on top between the two of them, which is just it's rough. If there's a 4v2 and Matt's at the bottom and he doesn't have a vote for two tribal councils and his closest ally is being told to distance themselves from him, and it's in her, it's like Claire's not going to Matt and saying distance yourself. She's going to Franny and saying distance yourself, which tells me probably Franny's going to get spared if they go and Matt's going to go. Maybe that's too obvious and like Survivor doesn't like to make it that obvious, so maybe it isn't going to work out that way. But what I'm seeing in front of me is just saying Franny and Matt are at the bottom of a 4v2 right now, and Matt is not looking the hottest between Franny and Matt if I had to pick one to go.
Yeah, and it's so Alexa, she did Carson at 9, Claire at 10, and then she did Lauren at 11. So I'm just catching her up on
Interesting.
her. Yeah,
Yeah,
Lauren.
I would love to know what her logic is for some of those
I
rankings.
know. And instead, I'm just reading off
I guess she
numbers. But
feels hopeful for Franny and Matt based on
yeah,
episode
well,
two.
but it's funny because I actually feel hopeful for Manny, Franny, and Matt too.
Manny,
Manny and
maybe
Frat.
that's the
I
yeah.
feel hopeful too. But if I'm going to feel hopeful for them, I certainly am not having Claire at number 10 like both of you do. And that I don't have Claire at 10.
You have her
Personally,
lower.
I have her lower. I think what's going to end
Oh.
up happening with Claire. Claire is conniving. And I think that they might not see that yet, but I think that she is on it. She knows what she's doing. She is playing the game well. And Claire very unexpectedly wants control of this tribe. She very quietly, she's, "Oh, I'm going to sit out my challenges. Look how funny I am. I'm just hanging out." She is dumb as a fox. She knows exactly what she's doing. She wants you to think this way about her. She is making you think this way about her. But how successful is that going to be if she turns around and says, "We need to split up this pair right now?" And everybody starts saying, "Is Claire playing this game? Is she playing this game way harder than we thought she was playing this game?" Because she looks so unassuming and she's trying to play that way. But I think that she's gonna almost pull a Sandra in Winners at War, where it's, "Don't worry about me, guys." But then all of a sudden overplay that hand and they say, "She's really good at this. Like, she knows what she's doing, and there's a reason she wants to make this happen." The big key here is Claire has sat out every single challenge. So she has shown no worth in the challenges, which she's all about. And I love it because she loves Courtney and Sandra, and I love Courtney and Sandra. Therefore, I love Claire, right? But she's shown no worth in the challenges. If you're worried about Matt and Franny, Josh, Heidi, and Danny are three. Matt and Franny are two. 3-2. You don't need Claire. You don't need her there. So that's where I worry for her. So at my number 10, I have Heidi. There's a long way to say I have Heidi at number 10, right? And then at my number 11, I'm actually going to put Kane. So I'm going to say that if they go to tribal council, Jamie's the one who's in trouble. So that tells you in my bottom, it's 15, right? So in my
Yeah,
bottom
15.
four, I have Claire in my bottom four below
Oh.
Kane. So I think that she's in a little bit more trouble, based on everything I just rambled about.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I do think from what I picked up on with the premiere and then episode two, Claire is quite shrewd. I think that she's quite perceptive. The fact that she had the wherewithal to strategize at the challenge, just it's a ton of initiative. US Survivor, that's like that was, I mean, Survivor AU does that all the time, like almost every single episode. But here it doesn't happen. And so to see that, I thought, okay, she's thinking outside the box, and I'm impressed with that. And then seeing her give pointers to Franny about what needs to be done, I'm like, and then she said she's like the star of laziness or something like that. And I'm like, I love it. I just wish there was more understanding of the dynamics of this tribe to know where she actually is fitting in and what does everyone else think about her? So I have like Heidi, Josh, Claire, and Franny back to back to back to back in my rankings. Because I don't really know, it's kind of a blob of green players. What's their dynamic? I know Danny's got an idol. He seems to be out in front a little bit. I know Franny and Matt are isolating themselves a little bit. I know that they're being looked at negatively. We saw next time on, there's a four-person alliance that seems to be putting their hands in and saying, let's go. And I'm like, well, that's not good for Franny and Matt. And if Matt doesn't have a vote, on one hand, I would say one of the biggest strategies I would say if I was playing on a tribe divide like this with 666 would be you want to keep unity going into either a swap or a merge. Maybe not a swap because there haven't been swaps the last three seasons, but I would expect at least going into a merge with the biggest tribe. The biggest problem is division. Mm-hmm. And that's what happens with these tribes. They always divide and break apart at the merge. They never, despite having the numbers, they never end up taking control. And it seems like on paper, the most obvious thing. So on one hand, I'm like, if this tribe goes to tribal council with the most numbers in Stowe, do they look to have a five-person majority and kick out the person that thinks at the bottom? Kicking out Matt or Franny might isolate Matt or the remaining player, which means you're losing a number. You're actually not at five. You're at four just by voting out number six. That creates a problem. So you want to look for unity as much as possible. I do agree your strategy of if you have a three and you have a two, if it sucks for the two because they're like, well, if we go again to tribal council, then what? But look at the numbers. How many people are left? 15. You're going to merge at 12, 13. If they go to tribal council at next episode, I'm not sure how many more tribal councils you have to worry about in the pre-merge. So, and if Claire is not boosting you physically in the challenges, maybe if you have to go to tribal council, you dump her, maybe you'll be able to win the rest. Strategically, I'm trying to parse through all of this to make sense of it. Cause you're also at some point, the pre-merge shifts from surviving as a tribe to surviving to the merge. And then it's just an individual game. So maybe you cut out the weak link that will allow you to survive and not have to go back to tribal council for two episodes or one episode. Maybe that's how Claire goes. I don't know.
I was going to put Claire at 12, but you just convinced me not to, and to put Matt at 12, because I think what you just said makes so much sense though. Why are you going to isolate one person when you don't need to?
Right. This is look at like a Ko Rong, for example, just quickly. This is what we saw with Aubrey, Joe, and Peter. And it was a three and they had numbers on the other side, but they ultimately cut Peter. And that it was intended to create a tribe instead of having it was a six person tribe. And Aubrey chose to cut the one to create a five strong, which ultimately didn't work because she wrote down Julia's name and then crossed it out. So it looked like she betrayed everybody. But on paper, that's not a bad idea, because if you cut out the one on the outside, it's a 5v1, then you've got a five strong. And that's more important, especially going into a merge, than having 4v2 or 3v whatever. 3v2 is not as good as 5v1 or 5v0. Anyway.
Well, and the biggest thing is you go into a merge now. Let's say they don't think they're going to get a swap and they think, okay, we're going to go into a merge and this is going to be our group of five. You know that those two votes are going one direction or the other. So just keep a strong relationship with them.
Yeah.
And then you have two votes working with you, not one, throughout the entire game. Now, you don't right now because Matt doesn't have a vote, but you would once Matt gets his vote back. I now think that actually voting out Claire makes the most sense if that tribe goes.
It depends on how Franny and Matt are okay. I don't think Matt's going to be okay if they're like, hey, we're going to vote Franny out. Like, what do you think? I see maybe Franny could cut Matt loose if she thinks it's the best thing for her game, but I don't know.
Yeah, well, ultimately, I put Matt at 12. I'm putting Claire at 13 because I still think Soka. After all this conversation.
Totally. Look, we can squeeze a lot out of this Soka tribe with very little content.
We have no content. We have given them so much more coverage than they've actually gotten on CBS.
I'm surprised we've talked like the least about Tika, and they probably were like the bulk of the episode.
Because you know what's going on with them, right? You know literally just going to be Carson, Carol, and Jam Jam are probably going to vote out Sarah. I mean, that seems to be where everybody's head is at.
Yeah. And like I put one of each player from each tribe in my bottom three.
Which who did you put at 12? Because you skipped 12.
At 12, I put, so it's between Jamie and Kane. And I put Jamie.
Okay.
Only because we're looking at Kane and the way that the tribe, like Jamie, when we see Jamie in episode two, we don't really see her talk and nobody really talks about her, but we do see her in scenes with everyone except for Kane. And to me, that just feels like if they were to go to tribal now or in the next day or two, it feels like Jamie's a little bit more included than Kane is. Kane is looking for the idols. Everyone else is there like doing the opposite of Danny, or Danny's looking for idols and the tribe is like, oh, that's just Danny. They're like, yeah, Kane's looking for whatever, and he's looking in trees for firewood. It's not in trees. He's like, hey, Harry, I found this crab in a tree stump and like a hollowed out. Like, were you looking for a crab? Were you looking for firewood in that tree? I think it would be on the ground. So they're just like, I'm getting this vibe that Kane is actually on the outs, and if they could, they would probably cut him first. I don't love Jamie's position. She is 12 out of 15. Like, that's pretty low. I could see an argument to flip him, and maybe there's some strategic argument that I'm not thinking about, but based on what I'm looking at, the scenes we got from Matu, I'm saying I think Kane is below Jamie.
Cool. So to kill Alexa, so that everybody knows, Lauren 11, Kane 12, Matthew 13, Sarah 14, Jamie 15. So I have the same bottom two as her. Because, and you have Sarah in your bottom two, but I don't want to hear, I'm going to let you go last. So I have Jamie at 14, Sarah at 15. Ultimately, I think Tika's in the worst shape out of the tribes. I think they've lost, like, I think pretty much once they lost Bruce, this was a tribe that was just going to start, you know, splintering and whatever. But I think Sarah is such an easy boot. If they go, you have your three people unified, like whatever, Sarah, Helen, Bruce, you're the bad luck bandits, man. I mean, there is just nothing that you can do with what happened. Once Bruce hurt his head, that was it. I mean, and they could have tried to get in a little bit better, but Sarah lost her vote. And then you have, you know, it was just crazy.
I think it was the 1-2 punch of Bruce going and then Sarah losing her vote.
I think that was it. And and so I have Jamie ahead of her because I do think if Orange goes, I think it will be Jamie because I think even though they're annoyed with Kane, I think that Kane can make some sort of argument about like, look, dude, Jamie was going to vote for you. Like she just didn't because she played her shot in the dark, but she was going to vote for you.
I mean, plausible deniability, though. Maybe she wasn't. She didn't.
Yeah, that's true. But I just wonder, like, if they lose again, if Orange loses, you're looking at, you have Green who has 6, you have 4, Purple has 4. Do you want to get rid of Kane over Jamie? And I know Jamie's a yogi and all of that, but has Jamie done much to help them yet? I haven't seen it because I haven't really seen anything interesting at the challenges. But anyway,
I would say like, yeah, that's an interesting thought. Like if they were to go to tribal council at the final 15, do they kick out Jamie or Kane? I do think that's going to be the discussion. And it's a question of like, which do they go for? Kane feels like he's currently the most socially isolated, which could be the reason to kick him out. Based on the scenes we got in episode 2, it feels like Kane's more on the outs than Jamie is. And it's like, on one hand, do you keep the tribe unity of 4 people? This feels like a really fractured tribe, though, so I don't even know if that's going to make... I think it might be like, it's just 6
you're gonna have
dozen
one
in the other. It's like 2 of the same thing. It's the same outcome no matter what. Kane might be more of a threat strategically, like, I think, but then also players like Jamie might fly under the radar if you get to an individual portion, maybe like an Erica, who you don't have your eyes on them and they slip under the radar for a while and then all of a sudden they come out strong. I think Jamie has that capability. We haven't seen it yet. So I don't know, like, what do you want to do there? Probably go down to who's more loyal to you. I don't think either are.
Jamie's probably more loyal, right?
I would say Jamie is probably more loyal personally. From what I've seen, I would say that, but I think there's a strategic there is a case to be made for Kane staying over her. So like if you put one over the other, I'm not terribly pressed, but I ultimately had Kane below her.
Yeah. And then what do you actually end up having? So what are your bottom two then? Who do you think is actually
going to Matt's at 13, and then from between Sarah and Kane, I put Kane at 15 and Sarah at 14. Even though I think Sarah is more of a guarantee to go, based on the conversation we just had between it could be Jamie, it could be Kane. I think Sarah's very likely a guarantee she's going. I think it would take, I don't know what it would take for her to survive at this point. Like maybe Jem goes to Advantage Island and loses his vote. And then all of a sudden it's like, do they vote out Jem? Does Carson flip to go with Sarah? Yeah. Do they blindside Carolyn? I don't know. I doubt it. The fact that Jem was willing to go so far to keep Carolyn in the game, we don't know if anyone knows she has an idol. She hasn't, I don't think she's told anyone.
I don't think so.
So no. He doesn't even know that. That's like a cherry on top of the fact that he's thrown in his lot with Carolyn. She's also got an idol. Like, great. That's great for him if they're working together, which they appear to be. So between that, it's like Carson has chosen a side, and with the numbers, like you've said, it just seems like a very obvious Sarah's boot, which is why I kind of don't want them to go to tribal council. I'm kind of hoping they don't. I'm willing it. I would rather see Green or Orange go because there's a lot more to talk about at the moment. I feel bad for Sarah. Lost her vote. didn't really have a choice, didn't have a choice. She's got an advantage, which is good for her. She does have her vote back. There could be some leverage there, but it just feels like Carson decided he picked a side, and for the longevity of his game, voting out Sarah is just the most obvious thing to do, which means that even though I don't think she's like playing a bad game, I just am like, you know, the same thing as Helen. It's like she's got the wrong side of the dice roll in the Mario Party game, and unfortunately enough, not through any fault of her, much fault of her own, producers made her lose a vote by bad luck, forcing her to draw. She didn't have to. She might not have, but she might. She probably would have anyway and lost her vote, but still. Her ally gets blindsided when Carson flips and casts Laudan with the other side. I don't blame him. Like I said at the top of this podcast, I don't blame him for doing that. It would have probably come down to rocks if he decided to force a 2-2 tie. And then he's looking down the barrel of a loaded gun. And it's a 50, it's a 50-50 at that point for him. So all that being said, Sarah's number 14. I think if Purple goes back to Tribal, I think it's like a shoo-in that she's going. And I don't like it, but that's how the cookie crumbles.
Yeah. And yeah, Sarah and Kane are both kind of victims of the new school game if they go, because Kane had to vote for somebody. He didn't have a choice at that point. You know,
I mean, he could have played a shot in the dark like everyone else at that point.
Yeah. But. And then that would have, he could have, but
that wouldn't have mattered at the end of the
day. That wouldn't have mattered.
Yeah. It's like, whatever.
Yeah. It's just kind of, he's stuck and Sarah's really stuck, and it'll be interesting to see what kind of game Sarah has, if she's going to be able to flip or anything like that. But like I said, I keep going back to like old school. Sarah feels like Kim from Palau, and like, you know, it's like once your closest ally is gone, like this person's just done. Like there's just nothing left. And I hope that's not the case, because give me some drama. Tika's been giving us great drama the whole time, but I just don't know if I'm buying it.
Yeah, she hasn't had a lot of characterization. And in a tribe full of the Carsons and the Jam Jams and the Carolins of the world, it's like, yeah, it just feels like the writing's on the wall.
I completely agree.
Like they're not investing in her because she probably isn't long for the game.
Yeah.
And that sucks to think about, because we're not there yet. So we have to get there. Could be next week.
Could be.
Two days.
2 days. Yeah, man. It is literally 2 days from now. It is 4:30 PM Eastern time. We are just over 48 hours until then. So everybody hang in there. Enjoy yourselves. You have anything else? Anything we didn't touch on? Anything we need to touch on? Anything?
I feel like, man, we managed to get a lot. That's like twice as long of a podcast over what we got. So not really. I think we covered literally everything from every tribe, all the different angles we probably could have. I'm interested to see what we're going to get. I kind of hope we get Soka going to Tribal Council for the first time, just to see what's going on with their dynamics. I'd like to have them fleshed out. I don't want a Luvu situation from 41 where we don't know what's happening very well. Yep. And we get to the merge.
All of a sudden it just happens.
You know, I thought we may get a swap, but maybe we won't at this rate. And if we don't, not a huge deal. But that's it. I think I'm good.
Cool. All right. Well, it's always a pleasure, Peridium. Always fun to have you. Anybody who wants to be a patron that didn't know you existed somehow and knew we existed, I don't know how the hell that would be the case. But go ahead.
I have a Patreon if you want to support me, or if you just want to go check out my YouTube channel. I post a video every single week on Peridium on YouTube. It's every Wednesday right before. I consider my videos like an appetizer to the main course that is the Survivor episode. I've been doing it for 5 years now and haven't stopped yet. Amusing behind the scenes stuff. As I was talking on the podcast, I have a bunch of videos loaded up in the queue to be posted in the following weeks, and three of them got copyright claims. So now I have to go back and re-edit them,
which
is not fun, but I'm sitting here getting flooded every 10 minutes with a new email from YouTube being like, you have a copyright claim. I'm like, oh, okay. I have to go re-edit that video now and figure out what I did wrong. So
yeah,
there's a little bit of fun stuff. That's what I'm going to be doing in the next few hours. But other than that, yeah, you can support me if you want to directly on Patreon.
Well, patreon.com/survivorspecialist is how you support us. And we don't get copyright claim because we don't put anything into it. We just sit here and we talk and blab and whatever. And maybe one day the Boston Celtics will hit me for having the Celtics bear back there. But that's about the only thing that could, I think. Patreon.com/survivorspecialist. John and McKenna have done their second Survivor Rewind episode. So if you're just like dying for more Survivor 44 coverage, John and McKenna have done that for the first two episodes, in addition to mine and Alexa's recaps. I don't know who I'm recapping with yet on Wednesday. Alexa won't be back. I have feelers out, so I'll let everybody know on Wednesday. You'll just be surprised, whoever's sitting there across from me. And anything else? Yeah, $20 patrons. Don't forget to get your power rankings in. Make sure you do that. And I gave the prop bet update, so I don't need to do anything else. I'm killing it. We're done. Pretty good. Thanks so much for joining. This was short.
Thank you for having me.
Podcast, but we still had a great, great time, great conversation. Mm-hmm. And man, I can't believe we actually did a mid-season podcast. I feel like it's been decades. But thank you, everybody. We will see you on Wednesday.